That we should start with our workshop and we shouldn't delay our invited guests who are here. Honorable Kawula. There are some. Those who want to sit red, some gap that side, please. If you won't mind, you can also occupy that space. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We want to propose that we start with our workshop. Good morning to everyone. Good morning to the bishop, His Grace, Bishop Le Khanyan, another bishop who are here, the leadership of the faith-based organization, our friends who are invited guests. Honorable members of the National Assembly, our Chapter 9 institution that is going to be presenting a report to us today for our discussion. Members are still coming, many of them. We invited other committees to attend. There are meeting also at committees. After those meetings, they will also join us this side. Their meetings are not going to take long. It's just to adoption of some report for presentation in the National Assembly for consideration by Parliament. We want to propose that we should try our level best to introduce ourselves. Because we wouldn't know the entire leadership that is here. Leaders of the civil society, broadly speaking, the faith-based organization, another research institution that are dealing with this matter. We will really request that we should introduce ourselves. And hopefully, it won't cause any harm for us to introduce ourselves. I will start this side and request members of the National Assembly to introduce themselves. Honorable Mteto. Member of the committee.
Boston Slondo, member of the committee.
Joyce Maduleke, member of the committee.
Sponile Kaulalo, I am member of the woman president.
Sherilyn Dudley, member of Social Development Committee.
Good morning, all. I'm Denise Robinson, and I'm a member of the women's portfolio, women in the presidency.
Hi, good morning. Shafiq Jadi, current PC member for the JCC.
Reverend Mutula, council member of the Lion Christian Church. Together with his grace, the writer and Dr. P. Bishop Aaron Makili, from the Great Commission, Minister of Networks, I'm the President of the Great Commission.
Edward Mapaza, Sierra Mass Commission.
I'm Emeritus Professor Shadrach Guto at UNETA, but I'm here in my capacity as an independent constitutional and legal consultant of the CRM Commission. Thank you.
Togum Kwanas, Chairperson of the Salmon Rights Commission.
David Musoma, Deputy Chairperson of the Salmon Rights Commission.
Shilam Bennett, Commissioner of the Salmon Rights Commission.
Renier Skuman, CLL Rights Commissioner.
Anton Smitser, CLL Rights Commission.
Pastor Tiva Lijade, Chairperson of the Church Leaders Empowerment Foundation Africa, CLEFA.
I'm Pumlani Diamond from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Noelan Prince. I'm a journalist with Media 24.
Good morning, Tandon Lemeza from the National Ministry of Justice. Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Lewan Tikani, Ministry Cocktail.
Bishop Nico Clarkson, Secretary General of Sussex Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Pastor Robert Natal, a member, the chairman of the Sussex in the Western Cape.
Good morning. I greet you all present in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I am the president of Sussex, Sussex 10 South African Union Council of Independent Churches.
Bishop SMD Matavela from Durban, director of spiritual things at Gospel Powerhouse.
Good morning, Advocate Nadine Bardenhorst. I'm from an organization called Freedom of Religion South Africa, 4FA, non-profit organization working to protect and promote religious freedom in South Africa.
Daniela Ellebeck, I'm Nadine's assistant.
Ranele Mbogazi from the World Gospel Powerhouse, Conferences and Training.
Good morning. I'm Honorable Simon Tembo, a member of the Cooperative Government of Traditional Affairs Portfolio Committee.
Chairperson of the Women in the Presidency.
Okay, thank you very much for your kind introductions. Very full, very helpful for us to meet with the church leaders, the bishops, the priests, and all other bishops who are here. Mama Mbogas. I can say as a summer. 19 years ago. Now so far as the phones. I know to talk to Ina actually. So thank you very much for the introduction and those who will be joining us. We will from time to time allow them to introduce themselves because it's very helpful for us to know who is in the workshop. It is a very important workshop that we took decision as members of National Assembly to allow members of the public and also the faith-based organization to share with us their experiences and their ideas on some of the issues that are facing all of us as South Africans. The main purpose of our workshop today is to allow our CRR Commission to present a report. Once they presented the report in details, we'll be able then to open the platform for many of us to make comments and have discussions. Everyone is free really to add a view, because what we want to do, once this workshop is concluded, we will then go to the National Assembly or National Parliament of the Republic of South Africa and present the comprehensive report. And then if that report is adopted by the National Assembly, then will be a report then that will work and assist us to address some of the challenges faced by our religious sector. It's a very important sector. That's why we thought that we should have this important workshop, because that will assist us also to understand some of the challenges that face by the sector. We are very grateful that the bishops and the leaders of the faith-based organization are with us. They will also be free really to express themselves. The main purpose is a workshop. Like all workshops, will have a different view and interpretation of the current situation. But you will appreciate that, precisely because all of us can learn a lot from this workshop. Other members of the National Assembly, of course, the speaker and the deputy speaker are not here in Cape Town, as they will also send their offices to attend, because they are also very interested in this workshop, because it's a very important workshop. In fact, it's our first workshop in 23 years of our democratic parliament to have a workshop like this, where we interact with the sector, the visual sector, broadly speaking, just to hear their views on some of the matters that have been identified by the report or by the CRR. We thought that it's very important for us to get together, have a discussion, workshop some of the proposals that are put forward, and see what else we can do to ensure that we don't allow people to abuse the beliefs of the ordinary South Africans. And then that's really the issue that all of us must be addressing. The constitution of our country guarantees freedom of association, freedom of speech, and many other freedoms. Either rights, human rights, basic rights, and then all of us who enjoy this constitution that is very progressive. But like all other constitutions, from time to time, the highest court in the land will interpret it in the manner that will assist all of us in South Africa to understand what does it mean to live in a constitutional democracy. What are the responsibilities for all of us? What are the leadership of the sector as a whole? What is their responsibilities when some individual simply abuses the beliefs of our people? What do we do in the sector, and also what do we do as members of the society? The workshop is meant for us to be open, to be frank, to raise issues. Maybe some of the issues won't be so palatable, but must be raised, because it's a workshop for all of us to enrich our understanding of many issues that are happening in our society. Broadly speaking, members of parliament themselves, they have many concerns about some of the issues that they see in TV, read on the paper, visit some of the areas in their own constituencies. We think this workshop will assist us to do so. And we are very grateful that we have taken time to be in Cape Town. Cape Town is very far. If you are from the northern part of our country. But for the fact that all of us are here is very, very appreciative. We hope that we are going to have a very fruitful workshop that will assist to interpretive in the report that is going to be presented by the CRR, particularly the chairperson of the commission, and then the team also is there, and the Professor Guto and the team will be able to assist us from time to time to interpret it, the relevance of some of the issues that are raised. There are some recommendations that they will present also. All of us will look at those recommendations. And we hope that the members, they will be free to express their views. It is a workshop, it's an in-house meeting. It's not a rally in the FNB stadium. Then we'll try to have enough time for us to have a very intelligent engagement with respect for cultural activities of people and religious affiliation. But under the sun, we must be able to engage South Africa. And that's why the National Assembly felt that we should have this important workshop also to allow the report to be presented in this broad meeting and then engage with the report, air our views, and then that will assist them to enrich the discussion that is going to take place in the portfolio committee after this workshop. We are very pleased that you are here. We have no intention to detain you for 2 days, at least for a 1 day workshop, and then we'll be able to have a lot of discussion. We have a very short agenda. Our agenda is a very short agenda, really. It's not going to cause a lot of... We are most welcome, as I welcome you. We'll then allow presentation by Chairperson CRL, the Rights Commission, Commissioner Togos, then we'll have also some messages of support. Some of the religious leaders, they want to express their views. And then we'll have then questions, clarity and comments, and some recommendations. And we'll allow them the closure and the adjournment of the meeting. It's not a very long agenda. I think it's going to be very helpful. But you will allow messages of support after the report has been presented or received by the workshop. We'll allow the religious sector or the faith-based organization to express some of the support on some of the issues. And then we'll open the platform for questions, for clarity, for comments, recommendations. And then we'll try to summarize the discussion, and then vote of thanks, and then we'll close our workshop. That is the proposed agenda that we are presenting for your consideration. If you are happy with the agenda as it stands, I think members, you are very happy with the agenda. Of course, The workshop is organized by portfolio committee. We are allowing them platform. Now it is convened by committee. And that's why they are here at CRL to present the report. We have also invited many of other sectors themselves, also have invited some of their colleagues who have been working with them for some time. There will be no harm at all to do it that way. It's going to enrich all of us on Abu Melham for this engagement. When you are ready, the chairperson of the commission, may we invite you to present the report and take your time and explain where you want to explain. The copies of the report, they are here. I'm not sure whether every person do have a copy. esimu bishop laphakana amakhosi. I hope that amakhosi is anele for. Awekona. Okay, no. Please just be free quietly to take something to eat. If you want to do so, it's a workshop really. Just feel free from time to time. Get water, get tea, get coffee. I'm sure that there's yogurt for. And then just quietly do that really. We think that would be very helpful because we woke up very early in the morning. To be here, we should allow some space for you to get something to drink. Can you assist in terms of the restrooms?
Good morning, everybody. The restroom to your right down the passage. So the second door to your left. The restroom is on left. Thank you.
No, they will always be signed. I know many of us who are above 60 always need the restroom. Always need the restroom. Professor, am I correct? Dr. Mutsume, I'm right. People talk about me right, I'm right. I can't say anything when doctors are saying I'm right. Sir, Masurati Uzo Tatao. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I would first like to thank the Portfolio Committee for this opportunity for us to come and present our report through a workshop, and the fact that it's the first of its kind in so many years, we feel this deserves that kind of attention because it affects millions of people in the country. And we'd also like to thank the religious sector, especially the leadership that has come with us to present our report from the various parts of the country, and we've been working with them on this report for a while now, even from the stage of pre-consultations before we started with our investigative study, to the point of writing the preliminary report, and now we're at the stage of the final report. So thank you very much for their support. It has been quite useful. Would like to be indulged in first saying, you may have seen a whole range of things maybe in the news or whatever that was happening while we were
during the investigative study, what we'd like to say is that we'll show you just a clip of like 20, 25 minutes so that you can actually have an idea of what was happening and what made us get to a stage where we made certain recommendations to contextualize the recommendations we made. We did record most of all of our interviews with various religious leaders. We, at some point, thought we were going to do this behind closed doors. The media took us to court, and the High Court ruled that it's of national importance and that the hearings had to be open to the public. So the hearings were open to the public from that day onwards. We then afterwards went into a process of the preliminary report. But before I say that, I think one thing I would have raised with the portfolio committee is that the issue of security was a very serious issue. In just trying to get to the information, it became unsafe at some point. It's still not quite safe, but the work continues, and at least today we've reached the stage where this is the end of the road, and we're hoping that the security issues might improve. But we're still at a stage where we're being told by the experts that it's still not quite safe, but we'll continue with the work. We'll ask your indulgence, Honorable Chair, to first flight the short clip that will show you broadly what we... This was over a period of like 6 to 8 months. We've just done excerpts, really, for contextualization, and then we'll continue with the report.
You know, African say, you service over in your You are so afraid of the person that you are afraid of the snake. And generally, I'm not saying no. Africans are afraid of snakes. What would make them, what would convince them that it's okay? People know they are not cows. They don't eat grass. What is this level of desperation that's going to make our people be willing to eat grass and wash down petrol? I was still talking about the same gospel. I was still talking about the same issue. And we said, these are the things we need to look into, and these are the things we need to be aware of and conscious of.
All those babies God is flushing them out.
And there's no money in.
Grass drew to the petrol, and then he proceeded to pour the boiling water all over the congregation and all over himself. And apparently the power of God.
General Assembly leader is convinced spraying his congregates with doom, Ravalajo's antics.
A priest in South Africa is facing trial for animal cruelty after he fed his congregation live snakes in a bizarre ritual to test their faith.
I did not feed people snakes, I feed them chocolate. That's why no one died after eating the snake. Yes, they did eat the wave and human hair. And also, but it was not testing like a wave. Any wave of the congregants, those who understand the spiritual matters of the kingdom. Because they are in the trance, such people. They were in the trance, and what's happening, that's why they never feel pain, they never do anything. It's the same AFPs that they buy on the shop. Yes, I did. As long as anyone can come now, who is the Holy Spirit, declare that this is food, I will eat it.
Who takes you and the food?
No, even me, when I prayed for it, I started by eating before I feed people, the congregants.
So you have between the organs and the snake and the
ant. That's why I'm saying, all things are possible with God. So Romans chapter 14 says, you as a strong faith, eat everything. So I cannot give people what I don't know.
I want to also just say something. I think that one of the greatest things South Africa has going for it is the fact that there are so many people of faith in our country.
Yes.
And I understand that these hearings are dedicated to looking at problems that it creates and addressing it and finding a better way. But I know that the broader mandate of the CRL Commission is to promote that. And I think that in a certain way, I know that there needs to be, you know, that there are concerns, but in a certain way, the fact that there's such a thriving of religion, I'm saying in Europe, religion is dying, but in South Africa, it's thriving, and there is a certain element of where a young pastor decides he can set up his own church. And I think, I understand the problems that come with that, but I think it's also very beautiful, and I think this will the challenge that you will face in your recommendations is finding the balance that encourages that kind of free spirit and that kind of really spreading of the word of God in the country, with making sure that it doesn't lead to the excesses that led to the establishment of these hearings in the first place.
The Nigerian pastor Timothy Omotoso has been arrested in Port Elizabeth. He's accused of sexually molesting young girls in his congregation.
Omotosho, Omotosho arrived in the country in
the year 2000.
Yes. But his church was registered before that.
Yeah, he arrived initially we were in England. So in 1999, with the world gentleman that came, he started with FSS project. So he sent one of the local pastors in England to South Africa. The original, it was FSS project, and then when he arrived, we changed it to Jesus Arena International, and eventually became Jesus Arena International. But over the years, obviously, it's changed directorship.
I think you need to alert them to the church. So since you are registered as having been a director in 1999, whereas you came to this country in 2002. So it means these documents are not correct.
And you must see the pastor by seven, this is the engine. Sisuka emazulwini. Sifike thina ke siyi angel ministry. Okokuqala andingo pastor.
They are saying that angel ministry. Firstly, I am not a pastor. Ndiyingelosi
esuka emazulwini.
I am an angel from heaven.
Ndihlala ngasekunene kukabawo. Ikhona ingelosi eyamkayo emazulwini enithi nguLucifer enguSathana esizoyifuna emhlabeni. ULucifer ufikile emhlabeni uSathana wenza waphefumulela iConstitution yaseSouth Africa nezikolo. Silapha nje sithi i-education irongo ngenxa yoba uSathana uzithabathele kuye izikolo evunyelwe nguNelson Mandela Rholihlahla. Sithi abantwana mabangayi ezikolweni ngoba uSathane ungenelele ezikolweni. Sisithi abantu mabangayimameli iConstitution ngoba idrayiva nguSathane. IConstitution ngiyithatha njengomoya kaSathane. Sizothi ihlabathi malibuyele kuyehova uThixo uSathane ahamphelele emhlabeni. Siyayazi indlela nale kaZulu izawuphelela phi. UZuma waphefumlelwa nguSteve Tshwete, unomoya kaSteve Tshwete. Akekho nomsuzi ehlabathini uZuma.
Why country of law? If you break the law of this country, the system will take care of you. You have broken the law. You told us in no uncertain terms. You are breaking laws. You are abusing children. When you deny children the right to education, the right to health, the right to social services, you are abusing those children according to the laws of this country. And we need to clear that ground and agree that you are saying you are flouting all the laws of this country.
How do you deal with differences when it comes to factions inside Islam?
The Muslim Judicial Council has in its constitution made it absolutely clear with and in regard to its founding principles. When we speak about Islam like in Christianity, we have various factions within Christianity. Sometimes we can find ourselves in Italy, sometimes we have the We have conflict. Currently within the Muslim community of Africa, we are of those who belong to the belief of the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah. It's a terminology that we stated within our constitution. In short, it is known as the Sunni Muslim.
First of all, the person that will be introducing the interrupt is Ms. Evans Matabane. And order of presenting, historical background of ZTC, the Zion Christian Church and Khanya, employment of foreign pastors and healing will be Reverend Mutola. And then Zion Christian Church fundraising strategies soliciting of payments, funeral, wedding, prayer. How does the ZCC utilize its funds? Submission of additional info, transfer of funds to other countries will be Mr. Pakani Matau. Training of religious leaders, then Christian Church governing body, conclusion will be Reverend Ima Faber.
Today they should support the thing that he is doing. He
say we have increased in heaven, which is your church.
And clear what happened is it's not written anyway. People are just writing it. There's no way we write Incredible Happenings Church. People they write the media Incredible Happenings Church. It is Incredible Happenings.
Okay. So you say it's a pity wise. It's a credit in happening. Pity wise, LCD.
No, what is it registered?
What is it registered?
It's registered as Stones Corporation.
CCC.
Have you got a copy of that registration on CCC?
Any service we render on people, but again, they will give it to me, I'll put it in the church.
You cannot confuse a private business, no matter how cultured. You cannot confuse your PRS fees, whatever, and say you're registered at the CC, because then it's illegal in this country to register a church and a CC.
So, but the attitude you come in here, this attitude you want to demonstrate something and prove a point, I don't know, to whom? Others. Because really, you want to engage with you, you are not fighting with you.
Wait, it's the matter. Let me collect that time. Wait, what do you do? Where does it end up? How is it spent? Who spends? Who's gathering it? Who's letting it? Practice it? Who signs at the bank? All those things will come from that bowl of money. Where does it go to? There must be an account. It can't be in a bank somewhere in your house. It has to be in a bank account. You just want to know which bank account keeps the money from past, from donation, from the ministry of that. Where does the money go to? The money you collected last Sunday, what happened to you? The money has been collected every Sunday. What do you do? Those are public funds. Because they are donated by the public. The laws of this country say, the judge has ruled that should, that that's a public thing.
I think that question, I have no answer to your question.
The position of society is very high. You hold in high esteem, even by traditional leaders, I must say. You have been high esteemed by ordinary citizens who are not even going to your own church, who believe in your sermon on television, who follow you even if they are in other provinces. But you sit here in front of me and it pains me, Prophet. It pains me because I'm one of those who believe in me. You don't know. The CRA has held you in high esteem. You know that. But today, you disappoint me. You bring shame to me.
South Africa is in crisis right now. We need to rebuild in this nation. You can't summon and threaten religious leaders.
You call them properly in a peaceful way, and don't divide them. Don't say Ray is good, he is good, and Ray is a leader of the system. Ray is in favor by apartheid. All the same. Ray is living in a 30 million house. He has a way of making money without trouble. But those other black people who don't know the dynamics, they just make money and they don't even have those needs. They don't even, you understand. So they are farmers are selling mochi, they are making money. They are collecting money. They have people who pay thousands, 14,000 to be a Sangoma, 27. They come here, we pray for them. We help them. If they say they know that I'm helping people, people are coming to support me to say, now, when I'm working right now. Right now, the media is here, it's not going to put that. I'm going to Alexander. The hostel roofs are gone. Houses are gone. They're not putting that in the media. I have to go and help those people. These indunas are here because I work in their community and I help them. And I didn't know that, you know, the laws of helping them somewhere, I'm going to get myself in trouble.
You've been instrumental in training many pastors, also in ordination. Some of the people staging protests claim that they were trained by you in Texas. Tell us something about that.
I think that what happened is we have had about 13,000 people graduate from our Bible school. But what we've done in the process, we started with a one-year program, moved it to a two-year program, and now to a third year. So we've really improved, I believe, the standards of the theology that we present. Secondly, when we first started, it was more like everybody just going to do what they wanted to do. So that's why I want to say today publicly that I'm in 100% favor of what you do. I believe it's very necessary. I believe that there needs to be an accountability. I believe that the time has come for what is taking place now through the Commission, 100% behind that. And we do whatever we can to help with this. But over a period of time, then we begin to move from a charismatic fellowship of people. And let me say this, I'm the father of so many people that I've never met. And I'm their father, I don't even know who they are or what goes on. But we've tightened up, we've become a denomination as the Ramey Family Churches. We only ordain after graduation and people that have qualified and gone through. And as I say, we've made that now for 3 years. And we've improved that. But when we first started, it was like just a freefall, in a sense. And so we've grown into more organized.
Is it possible that you can drink petrol and become alive? Go late.
If you want you to speak, then when you are allowed to speak, then you may speak. Okay. Then you are not allowed to speak, so I'm afraid to, excuse me.
I will speak.
This is a prophecy.
I'm allowed to speak.
We will have
order. I think we'll reach section 41.
I think so.
He is disrupting the work of the commission, and I hope you advise him to where he's going and call the police. No one is allowed to let me read it to you. So that you advise your people away. Right now, he's in push of the act. As we speak, he needs to know what's coming to you. A person commits an offense if that person willfully disrupts the proceedings of the commission or a committee of the commission or a session of a national consultative conference. Any person convicted of an offense in terms of subsection 1, that's the one I was reading, is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year, or to both a fine and such imprisonment.
Commissioner Botha, can you say it?
Yes. No, I still want to be sorry. Can we take a 5 minutes and then just take instructions?
Listen, you'll only get 5 minutes if I say so.
Sure.
Do you understand?
I get what you're saying, Chair.
Are you requesting for 5 minutes or are you demanding 5 minutes?
I'm requesting for 5 minutes, Chairman. I need to take instructions.
Wait a minute, where are they given?
I'm
still asking Commissioner Botha if it's a line.
Madam Chair, I can give them 5 minutes. Just
yes.
Okay.
Now you are given 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir.
Many people wonder, many people consulting. Let's go now to the tree, let's walk around and see what people buy there. Do you want to give an eye? It's illegal. But people are doing it. We know stories in the past. I mean, we have people who eat things. So now, if grass is not edible, who died? First of all, who died? That's why I said scientifically, let's not lie and say it's cool. Let them eat cool without food. So now, what I'm saying is, let's look at this. It's not only me. It's not only me. There are lots of traditional things which are done in this country. People have been eating things which are not edible. And they crush them, they put them in food. This we know, people. I don't need to explain this. We know. Cannot say whether it's going to continue or not. The answer is from God, it's not from me. I cannot say. But if I remain as I am, I'll remain as I am. Not for them. Because I have to be submissive to you. If they stop doing this, I'll stop.
The Holy Spirit.
Yes. If it's not, I'll stop. That's the Holy Spirit is within God.
Social media has shown photographs of Rabaloho spraying Doom aerosol on volunteers during his church service at the weekend at the Mount Zion General Assembly. The 24-year-old said people came with injuries and after they were sprayed, they were healed. Rabaloho has been dubbed the prophet of doom.
Because a lot of our pastors are aliens, are people from Nigeria.
I felt a little disappointed in being subpoenaed.
An institution of this nature shouldn't operate by way of stick. It should operate by way of consensus.
We were not praying too much to come to this room.
These are the emotional harassment.
Unfortunately, the earth is structured such that there's no room for letters of invitation. For obvious reasons, which was explained to the media, that when you use public funds, it shouldn't be a hit and miss kind of situation. If we give, because we're going to go right around the country, if we give religious people invitations right around the country, and we fly to Cape Town and nobody comes, we go to Northern Cape, nobody comes, we go right around. When the Auditor General comes here, is going to ask you, okay, so where is the file of evidence, what they call the file of evidence, that should have attendance registers, who came, who didn't come, will be in serious trouble, will be said to be doing fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
I'm not a Christian, because Jesus is not a Christian, and God is not a Christian, Abraham was not a Christian, Moses was not a Christian. I believe God is above the law. I believe God speaks to me. I believe God is above the law of South Africa. If the law of South Africa goes against God, I believe that's wrong. I believe as a king, I rule my people. Please use people. I'm not a pastor, not a bishop. I'm a king, and I'm a genealogist or a prophet of God because I hear from God.
So you've got
hands,
you've got olive oil, you've got water.
I've got miracle cloth. We've got clothes, sometimes suits, whatever you buy. Stickers on the cars, on the refrigerator, on the doors, on the windows. Some they buy my pictures, they keep it there according to their faith.
Is that part of the non-profit company, or do you have a
I won't define that because that's not my job. My job is to do what God tells me. And what God tells me doesn't come straight to me. And I still think the mentality of the church not making a profit is a disaster. And no church will ever have the power. Because I won't be on TV. You will not have known me. I won't have a website. I spent close to $1 million a month to run this ministry. If there was no faith, what are they I'm selling? I thank God that I'm not a Christian because you were going to shut my business and it's helping people. I think government of South Africa must get to think again, calling the church. The church depends on the handout. The church must create jobs. The church must create wealth. I'm looking forward to this church that will be so rich, this nation, because the word church in faith, I decided to not call myself church because you were crowded away. The word church means the people who are called out by their king, nation, race. You know, it has nothing to do with the religion, religious step.
As the Sarah Wright Commission, which a whole range of people agree with us on, that the religious sector needs to be regulated. I always say lawyers have the law society, social workers have the council, and teachers of SACE, and everybody has a group of peers that they are accountable to. So what we're saying is that we're following the CRL Rights Act of 2002. Okay, thanks a lot. That was just to show you briefly in terms of what transpired during the hearing. And we believe that this will make sense when we make presentations. I think part of what transpired was that, for instance, there are people who came in quite angry and they left being quite reasonable. I must quote, which you put in there deliberately, Bishop Zondo. He was very angry at some point. Now, you know, I call him my best friend because he eventually understood what this was about. And that it wasn't about marginalizing anyone. And we've been able to win over a lot of the people. There are those that are still resistant for obvious reasons. If people are benefiting, they're likely to hold on to a system that benefits them. They're not likely to give up the system. So what we're going to do, with your permission, Honorable Chair, we'll go through the presentation, and then if you allow me, Honorable Chair, I'll hand over to Prof. Nsoma to then look at messages of support, but I'll first go through the presentation with you. This is just an overview of how we've structured the presentation. The presentation follows the report, really. We will try and go through broader issues first, the constitutional and legislative framework. And as you can see next to me, Professor Kuto, who is an expert, really, a constitutional expert, and we've been consulting with him
in terms of the constitutionality of our proposal and what our act allows us to do. So firstly, we'll go through the legislative framework. We can go there. Let's start with the Constitution. The Constitution of the Republic, Section 15.1, says everyone has a right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. And we're basing the whole, all of the recommendations on that. That is sacrosanct. We cannot violate that. And then Section 18 says, everyone has a right to freedom of association. And we believe that our recommendations protect this right. And then we cover Section 31.1, that persons belonging to a cultural, religious, or linguistic community may not be denied the right with other members of that community, A, to enjoy their culture, practice their religion, and use their language, and to form, join, maintain cultural, religious, and linguistic associations and other organs of civil society. And the legislative framework is the right in subsection 1, of course, it goes to say may not be exercised in a manner inconsistent with any provision in the Bill of Rights. Although you've got these rights, they should not violate the other rights. So there is a limitation to your religious rights, which we're talking about today. And then Section 36.1 will say the rights in the Bill of Rights may be limited only in terms of law, general application, to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom, taking into account all relevant factors, including the nature of the right, the importance of the purpose of the limitation, the nature and extent of the limitation, the relation between the limitation and its purpose, and less restrictive means to achieve the purpose. Except as provided in subsection 1 or in any other provision of the Constitution, no law may limit any right entrenched in the Bill of Rights. What we're saying, if we can go back, is that we've interrogated our proposal. We've had a constitutional expert look at it, we've looked at it ourselves, and we feel what we're proposing in terms of limitations makes sense, because we feel the violations that are out there are so extreme such that we need to look at a mechanism that is reasonable. The previous one, before this one. That is very reasonable. That is not going to be too extreme. And when we get to our proposals, you see what we mean when we say they should not be too extreme. And then Section 39.1 says, when interpreting the Bill of Rights, a court, tribunal, or forum must promote the values that underlie an open and democratic society based on human dignity, which we feel is very important because people's human dignities are being violated. Equality and freedom must consider international law and may consider foreign law. And then the Constitution goes further to say, when interpreting any legislation and when developing the common law, customary law, every court, tribunal, or forum must promote the spirit, purpose, and object of the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights does not deny the existence of any other rights or freedoms that are recognized or conferred by common law, customary law, or legislation, to the extent that they are consistent with the Bill. And then we went to the CRL Act. We feel constitutionally we've covered all the grounds. We've looked at all angles, we've looked at what could be violated by the proposals, and we're convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that we are safe. And then we looked at the CRL Rights Act, which this parliament passed in 2002. The objects of the commission are to promote respect for and further the protection of the rights of cultural, religious and linguistic communities, and B, to promote and develop peace, friendship, humanity, tolerance and national unity among and within cultural, religious and linguistic communities on the basis of equality, non-discrimination and free association. We fill those two before we move on to the next. In terms of protecting respect for and to promote respect and protect the rights of, in this particular case today, religious communities, we feel the violations that are happening are actually abusing the rights of religious communities, which are congregants in this case, especially within Christians. And we feel that whatever proposals we have right now on the table, they are based on free association. When we get there, we'll highlight why we feel this is important in terms of freedom of association. We're also asked to foster mutual respect among cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. And then there's a section in our Act 5.1. It says the Commission may do all that is necessary or expedient to achieve this object referred to in section 4 above, which includes protecting and promoting the rights of religious leaders in this example. And we must do everything that is necessary or expedient. And part of what we must do, including to monitor, investigate, and research any issue concerning the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. That power is given to us by this parliament, that is in 2002, to say we can monitor, investigate, and research any issue that is based on religion in this particular case. And we feel the issue of religious communities, which is congregants, we have the powers to do all of this. It also includes to establish and maintain databases of cultural, religious, and linguistic community organizations and institutions and experts on the communities. You'll see when we get to the recommendations around registration, we're basing it on the fact that the Act already empowers us to establish and maintain databases of a religious community organization. And religious community organizations would be churches, of course, in this example, and institutions and experts, which would also include practitioners in a religious sense. You'd be talking about pastors and bishops, etc. So already the CRL Rights Act expects us to maintain, to establish and maintain databases. So what we're proposing is not something new. It's already in the Act. We're actually saying we need to implement this part of the Act, which is 5.1J, that asks us to establish and maintain databases. We've been discussing this with experts in the field, including Professor here, that this allows us to register already. We're not asking for new powers. It's just that this has not been done in the past, but where we are as a nation, we're at a stage where we need to look at how we solve problems on the ground. Why the investigative studies? I'm sure you've seen the short clip that we showed you, that there are problems, serious problems out there. People are being made to eat all sorts of things. And that some, not all, we need to stress. Some, especially churches, are running like businesses, really, and not even good businesses for that matter. Some are not even registered, others are commercialized, really, in terms of making money out of poor people. And that belief are totally abused. Most communities have been asking for something to be done about the perceived commercialization of religion and abuse of people's beliefs. At the time when we started this, there were a lot of complaints, a lot of cries from communities that said to us, as the Sarawak Commission, we need to do something about this, find solutions. How do we protect congregants? How do we make sure that the people out there, especially those that are poor, especially those that are marginalized, issues of poverty and inequality and unemployment make people very vulnerable. And I must say that women, usually, even if you look at the clips, most of the people who are eating grass and doing all sorts of other things are mainly women. Women are more vulnerable to these challenges because we tend to carry more problems in terms of looking after the family. The responsibility lies with women, and then the desperation is also located within women. Then they're easily exploited by people who want to make money out of them. Why the investigative study? Most communities, yes, they've been asking us to do this, and then we did it. In response to the above, the commission decided to investigate and understand further issues surrounding the commercialization of religion and the abuse of people's belief systems. And we also decided to identify the causes underlying the commercialization of religion and the abuse of people's belief systems. And we also needed to understand the deep societal thinking that makes some members of our society vulnerable and gullible with respect to views expressed and actions done during religious ceremonies. Some people have said to us, while we're doing this investigation, why would people allow themselves to do these things? Why would they allow someone else to do this to them? And we then had a separate investigation that we did with UNISA to look at what makes people so vulnerable and so gullible. Broadly, the answers were, to summarize, it's the whole issue of poverty, it's the whole issue of inequality, it's the whole issue of unemployment. But we also discovered that as people lose more and more hope in normal answers, when you feel, okay, I'm not going to get this job in a normal way, like other normal people, there must be another way. That's when they become more vulnerable and more gullible, because then you look for supernatural answers more. And if someone says to you, eat this grass, tomorrow you'll find a job. You will. Whether tomorrow you find a job or not is another story. But for now, at that particular point, when everything seems to be close to you, and the only possibility is this person in front of you who then says to you, if you do this, tomorrow you do that. And you find that sometimes, especially older persons, you'll find that maybe they've got high blood pressure and diabetes, you know, normal chronic issues. And then this particular person, the man of God, says to them, you know, if you buy my water, I'm sure you saw some of them, they say they sell pictures, they sell whatever. If you buy any of these things, you won't have to take your chronic medication. And we've had complaints where all the persons, people will come and say, my mother, my granny, died with her medication in her bag. She refused to take it because the pastor said, take the holy water. And the holy water will cure you, forget these pills you are taking. And of course, the holy water is not free. For instance, the one in Devon was telling us he sells holy water for 30 rand. Water this side for 30 rand. Because he buys it at 4 rand and then he prays for the water and the value of the water goes up. So the prayer itself is what is being sold as opposed to the water. So you find that the commercialization aspect of it is coupled up with the abuse. Because once I believe in God and I believe in the power of healing, God's healing power, it's easy for someone to abuse that belief that I have and to take away my grant money. You find that most of the, you know, old age pensions that people are getting end up being diverted because they are believers. And when someone sells them water or all these things, faith water, faith oil, faith pictures, faith t-shirts, faith caps, people buy because they believe. And hence we're saying, this thing is very critical because it's about who you are. It's about your beliefs. It's about believing that God heals. It's a godly purpose that is being exploited by other people. And assess the legal framework governing the religious sector. That's what we wanted to do. And it's relevant to deal with the prevailing religious challenges. We then looked at what exists out there. If I want to set up a church, what legal framework is there for me to follow? Are there laws that say you must register, or you register because you want to? If you don't register, is there a system that punishes you? How do we deal with all of that? And then we had a few research questions. For instance, what is the spread of religious institutions in the country? How many are out there? What various miraculous claims are made by religious leaders in terms of the power to heal and make miracles? What form of legal framework regulates the religious sectors currently? How much money is generally made by religious institutions and how is it spent? How religious institutions generate the funds they have, what governance structures are there in religious institutions that govern these institutions. In looking at all of that, part of what we had to do was to ask for financial statements. I must say some of the people who came to us gave us a whole range of information. Some of them refused completely and said they don't see why we would have access to their annual financial statements or bank statements. This has nothing to do with the Civil Rights Commission, or some of them would say with government, these are private funds. And all we're asking for was, you know, the information that is already asked for in the NPO Act, that they need to submit those financials anyway to social development every year. And they never did submit, and some of them are refusing till today to submit. Others have decided they would rather go to court than submit those documents. So we then had to do what we had to do. Part of what then we found, our findings, why, that there's no comprehensive database of religious leaders and places of worship. There isn't a place you can go to, and according to the SARA Rights Act, it's the SARA Commission that should have this information. But you find that there's a breach in social development when they register as NPO, some of it with CIPRO, when they register as NPCs. And you find that some religious leaders, especially those that are from outside, they go to Home Affairs, and in that way they get registered as religious leaders because they are applying for work permits. So there isn't enough comprehensive database that covers these things. There's a high number of unregistered religious institutions. Even social development sites, and those that are registered, are not reporting accordingly. There's a high surge in number of both local and foreign religious leaders. And that is in the deaths of worshippers who are using faith products, and defaulting on their chronic medication is high. We feel that this is a very dangerous situation because although people have access to chronic medication, they default, whether it's HIV and AIDS, whether it's other chronic medication, they default on the medication because they're using faith products. And there's financial abuse of worshippers. You find the threats directed at worshippers who do not pay the stipulated amount of tithes. If, for instance, some of the churches we discovered that they would say, bring your payslip, and then they would calculate your 10%. And then if you don't pay the 10%, then they would threaten you with going to hell and God punishing you and those types of things. Sometimes they say you must pay for a prayer. If you want to pray for your mother who's in hospital, they'll tell you how much that costs, and the prayers wouldn't start until the money is reflected in the bank. Some people came to us with very serious complaints about some of their religious leaders. Demands for cash for successful business deals prayed for. If you are applying for a tender and they pray for you, they want a particular percentage of that tender that they've helped you pray for. The blending between the religious leader's salary and the religious organization's funds. We found a lot of this because part of it, the money is in one pool. So the religious leader would go into the pool and take whatever they want to take, and it's all in there, and it's not like it's separated that you earn a salary and you have your own private account, and the church has its own private account. The entrepreneurial religious organizations and the challenges of return on investment. This is still a challenge, really, in terms of when you start up your own church with your own money and you think of a church as an investment and you want a return on your investment and you say, I started this thing myself, so when it starts making a profit, I should be able to benefit out of it. And it's one of those entrepreneurial churches that we see. We saw quite a number of them where the issues are quite blurred. And because I started the church with my own money and I bought my own tent and chairs and sound system, it is my investment and I'll use it the way I see fit. And there's lack of effective financial management and good governance structures. Participation of women in these religious practices, as I said, the issue of women in this religious practices is quite alarming in terms of the ratio between men and women. But where there's more abuse, you find that there are more women than men. Where they're being asked to do more outrageous things, you find that it's maybe more women than men who are there. There's a very serious gender bias in these churches in terms of the abuse of people's belief systems. We saw cult-like religious organizations, and so I'm sure you saw the Seven Angels from the Eastern Cape, who have hundreds actually of followers, and their children have never been to school at all, who are now adults. Even some of the Seven Angels, I think the two had gone up to like standard 3, which is the grade 5, the others had never been to school at all. And the children in their church don't go to school. I'm sure some of them, you saw that social development in the Eastern Cape to fetch some of the kids. But what we discovered was that some of them are adults and they've never been to school. And they can't read, they can't do anything because they believe that church is the a school is a devil thing, it is the place of the devil, and the constitution is the thing drafted by Madiba and the devil, and with a huge following. And people have to sell their, you know, possessions and go live in that church. And they have to take their pensions, they have to sell their homes and hand over the money to these young angels who are from heaven, so they say. And the scariest part with this church, hence we want to highlight it. You know, they say they've seen the devil was here, and, you know, they were supposed to catch him, whatever. But when you have hundreds of people dependent on these 7 young people who now, for now, have buckets of money that they've stowed away in their church. When the money runs dry, we shudder to think what's going to happen. Because cults like these, then people have mass suicide. Because the money is no longer there, how am I going to feed you? So the next thing is, let's go meet Jesus. Then everybody must go up and meet Jesus halfway. If we don't move with the speed that this deserves, we might find ourselves with a huge problem when hundreds of people die. So time is of the essence in these issues. And the unconventional teaching styles, for instance, drinking petrol, I'm sure you heard the young people there justifying that a snake might look like a snake, but it's chocolate, and that, you know, petrol is actually juice, and, you know, all sorts of things. And when these things happen, we might initially think it's just for television. But what we discover is that they continue and try other things as they move along. It's churches of miracles, so it's not like there's a formal church service. It's all acting. And there's the issue of salvation through kissing. We've seen some of the pastors. Women have to kiss the pastor in order for the blessing to be transferred. It's against women. And then there's the issue of course, the famous pastor of doom. And all sorts of other things are happening. But what we've also realized is that not all the activities make it onto the media. So when people say these activities aren't many, we always ask, how do you know what's happening in a village somewhere in the middle of nowhere? Simply because you didn't see it in your computer or TV doesn't mean it's not happening. We'll only know when people die that there's a problem. And say, not so long ago, people didn't know anything about the seven angels. This is me in the Eastern Cape. And they've been alive and well for many years. Even people from the Eastern Cape were not aware that there were seven angels from heaven who have descended here and there. You know, all sorts of wonderful things have been happening to them. And religious leaders driving cars and trucks over worshippers and putting worshippers in the deep freezer for up to an hour. And saying this is a holy experience. And when you ask them, what is this? They claim it's actually the young man who was feeding them snakes. He's moved on to cars and, you know, freezers for some reason. He said, the Holy Spirit told me to do this. And he calls it freedom of religion. And he says, you should be protecting freedom of religion and not attacking freedom of religion. So again, we ask the experts, can this be freedom of religion? And our answer is no. These things need to be kept before people die. And we found that there's lack of training generally. There's no peer support, peer monitoring, and there's no understanding of legislation and legal procedures in the registration of religious institutions. This is critical because when you have a calling, you're not necessarily trained for the job. It's not like when you have a calling as a doctor. When you have a calling as a doctor, you don't start and say, I'm going to be seeing two patients. You go through training. But when you have this kind of calling, you then start. Some of them are genuine, but they don't know how to do this, what the law says, what is the right thing. So you're saying there's a very strong need for training as well. Lack of monitoring and peer review mechanism like in other professions, like with doctors, with lawyers, with social workers, even with judges. The JSC is a peer review mechanism, or if you're a judge and you've done something wrong, you go somewhere and other people determine how wrong is it. But in this particular case, if you're a standalone pastor and it's your church, you run it yourself, there's no one who says to you, hey pastor, you know, what you are doing is out of order. Because the next thing will be, whose church is this now? If you don't like what's happening here, you know what to do. You must go and leave me with my church. So it's that kind of situation where there's no monitoring, there's no peer review mechanism, and the vulnerable people then suffer even more. And those that are dependent on this particular religious leader for their faith and their healing, etc., will then suffer even more because of that. And we're proposing a particular structure. We've got the structure in your report, I think it's page 50. We've given you copies of the structure because we feel this is critical that you keep referring to it. So there are copies of the structure that has been. It's page 42 for those with the report. This is at the core of what we are proposing. It's also at the core of what those that oppose us are opposing. And we are saying we've looked at many, many angles of how to solve this thing. The first thing we're saying is that there must be compulsory registration of religious practitioners. If you start at the bottom of the diagram on page 42 or the one that was given to you by hand. We're saying every religious practitioner in the country must be known. Where is this one? What is he or she doing? Where are they doing it? You find that for some missionary churches, traditional churches, whatever you want to call them, like your Methodist, Catholic, Anglicans, etc., the other bigger churches, are already doing that. Even some charismatic churches that have branches, etc., already are doing that. If I were to ask His Holiness the Bishop, my bishop here, he'll tell me where people are. He's got a list of who belongs to the ZCC, who's a leader there, where are they. But you find that those that are standalone, if I start up my own thing, nobody knows where I am. I don't report to anybody. Whatever I want to do, I do it, and I wake up in the morning and I say to people, because God said, I must do this. And that's a very strong, very, very strong utterance. You find that believers do anything once the religious leader says. Last night, God said. And at that point, nothing is up for debate. Once he says, God said, I must ask you today to pay 50 rand each. You will find that 50 rand, even if the last cent you have to go buy bread for the kids, because he said, God said. We've seen recently when a pastor was on the phone talking to God. Literally, there was a video during the round saying, yes, God, what do you want me to say, God? And God is there on the other side of the phone giving him instructions what to say to his congregation. What can be more powerful than that? Because that's the most powerful tool you can use. Because whatever you say, at some point it says, God, I can't hear you. Oh, yes. And you say, at that point, if you're a believer and you're part of the congregation, you truly believe it's on the line with God. He has literally dialed the number and is talking to God. You've got two powerful things. God and the cell phone, a combination of the two. And you abuse people using just that. To us, it might seem like, seriously, this is ridiculous. How can people believe this? But faith is like that. And that's why I'm saying we're taking this so seriously and so critically, because we feel on issues of faith, things get complicated. Reason and science evaporate. You're not going to be asking whether there's a Vodacom mast in heaven or whatever, how is this phone, what is the phone number. You just accept. And we feel this will help. When you first start with register them. Once you register them, you take it to the second link, which is worship center. The worship center, we're calling it a worship center, it's a place where you worship. It can be a church, a mosque, etc. We'll get to that later, but anything. It can be under a tree, it can be in the fence, it can be in someone's garage, it can be any space that also needs to be registered. How is this registration supposed to happen? We are saying every religious leader must belong to an umbrella organization like CLEFA, like SOSIC, like SACC, like other umbrellas. Where we're saying you can't be a standalone anymore. Because once you stand alone and there are no peers above you where you say, okay, I report to this one, it gets complicated. So it's not the state. It's structures like the SACC, like SOSIC, like CLEFA, like others. They'll tell you there's no state involved in their umbrella organizations. And then we're saying about the umbrella organizations, because we'll have many umbrella organizations, because people have freedom of association. They must join an umbrella organization of their choice or form one. Whichever. If we feel we don't have an umbrella organization as a group of 1,000 pastors or whatever, we want to start up our own. That should be allowed. It's part of freedom of association, and you start up your own, and it consists of your peers, and you have your own executive, etc., that manages things for you. And that those umbrella organizations must then form a peer review committee of that particular religion. So a peer review committee of Christians, which will act as your law society, etc., etc. But your first port of discipline in case things go wrong, what then should be in your church. Your church should be able to call you to order under normal circumstances. But we face with abnormal circumstances right now, where people own their own churches. If you belong to other traditional churches, and you are a reverend in an Anglican church, and your church leaders here see that the reverend is out of order, they would normally discipline you, then take you to the bishop, etc., etc. But we're dealing with a peculiar situation here. So we say, if your worship center fails, because probably you own it, it's your church, you built it with your own money, and you tell people to leave there alone, then an umbrella organization should be able to discipline you. And if they find that you cannot be helped, they should then determine whether you can still be, a pastor. You need maybe to get time out and be suspended. Maybe you need to be struck off the road like they do with lawyers, with doctors, with everybody else. And if they decide that, they then go to the umbrella organization and present the case. And remember, the umbrella organization consists of people from the same faith that have been elected democratically by themselves. And then they say, okay, this is what happened, etc., etc. This pastor, or this bishop, or whatever, we've been trying to guide him, and we've discovered that we can't help him anymore. We've prayed, we've fasted, we've done everything. He can't be unleashed onto unsuspecting people. And then they say, okay, we then can't help him. And then they say to the CRL Commission, CRL Commission, because of your act, you are holding this database of religious practitioners. This particular religious practitioner as fellow Christians, or as fellow Jewish people, or Muslims, or Rastafarians, etc., we feel this one can't be helped anymore. So please, let him be removed from the list of practicing pastors or reverends or whatever kind of leadership. And then the CRL, of course, you have to look at whether the laws, labor laws, etc., disciplinary laws, etc., have been followed. And if all laws have been followed, then we'll have to say your peers, write to the person concerned. Your peers, after this process that you are aware of, have decided that they do not want you to be one of them anymore. And that you must now vacate this situation. However, if you want to appeal, like all recommendations, of course, of Chapter 9 institution, you can take it to the High Court and then, the normal procedure up to the point of the Constitutional Court, if you so wish. And we feel that this peer review mechanism where religious leaders themselves can say, we cannot be in the same room with you and you can't because one of us will help the nation, but also will protect the doctrine, because the doctrine needs to be protected by the people who belong in that particular doctrine. So we'll say to people, we will hear from you which one is fit and proper to do the work and who is not fit and proper to do the work. We just hold the register and we act accordingly. We are hoping that this will help guide and calm the situation in the country, so that people know that if I do something wrong with my congregants, something terrible will happen to me. Yes, right. And then the issue will come to it later, the issue of the peer review council. But let's start with the religious practitioners. Registration of all religious practitioners in the country should be done. We feel there is a need to know where they are, what they are doing. And reasons for registration is that one, you need to have a register of all practitioners who are involved with all religions. Two, it will assist in maintaining a database of religious practitioners and where they operate from. And then it will also help to ensure that all religious practitioners are vetted against all relevant national registers. If your child protection register and your sexual offences register. When you're going to be a social worker, for instance, you have to go through a vetting process because no one wants people who have been doing strange things with children to then come back and run a church and then have access to our children, and we think the good person of God is helping our children whereas he's doing other things with our children. So knowing what we know now, we feel that the vetting process for religious leaders should happen, and that anyone who was ever found guilty of a sexual offense and or a child abuse should not be part of the sect. We have been told that God forgives, and we say yes, God forgives, but God doesn't say go play with children again. What we're saying is that God will forgive you, but you must work under someone, and then maybe work in the finance section or work in another section where you won't have access to children because you've got this history, and we don't want to gamble and expose our children to someone with a history that is not so good. And and then we go to worship center. How do you define a worship center? It can be a mosque, a synagogue, a church, open field, riverside, school, conference center, or halls, home, garage, cinema, classroom, temple, etc., where people gather to express their religion. We are saying that we want to recognize all forms of worship. It's not just because you have a building called the church. Some people don't. They go to school and they use classrooms or school halls, etc. And they need to be recognized as running a church there or a religious institution, wherever that is. And the umbrella organizations where people will affiliate, whom the CRL Commission, the one the CRL Commission will depend on to register people, will be based on the principle of freedom of association. We are saying you can't force people to belong to a particular association. They must choose whichever they want. Umbrella organizations will register religious practitioners and their places of worship and submit this list to the Civil Rights Commission. Some people have said this is going to be very difficult to do. We are saying if, for instance, the Roman Catholic Church says, and CRL is our list of people, 3,000 of them are in the country, this is where they are located, or the Dutch Reformed Church, etc. You already have those, so you don't need to go look for them as umbrella organization. And if Sources says, yes, our list, our people are here and there and there, you already have that ready, so you just absorb the list. You're not going to go looking for the list. Develop a governance, part of what they do is to develop a governance framework which includes a code of conduct, capacity building program, disciplinary procedures. We're saying this is the first port of call in terms of defense. When there's a problem, this is where the problem will be solved. If it's not solved at place of worship level, in a church or synagogue or whatever, this is where it will be solved. So they must have a procedure for discipline, capacity building programs that will help them in financial management, governance issues, you know, the whole governance framework. And the code of conduct is also very important so that people know what is the right thing to do and what is the wrong thing to do. And the peer review committee shall be composed of representatives from formally recognized umbrella organizations. We are saying the Sarah Commission will recognize the umbrella organizations when they submit their constitution, etc., and all those other documents we mentioned before, and say, okay, you are an umbrella organization. Now register people and take care of them and guide them and monitor them, etc. Each peer review committee will be religion specific. That is a committee for Christians, a committee for Rastafarians, etc., etc. You won't find a committee that is as two religions. It will be one religion per committee. Then it's the role of the peer review committee will be to advise the commission on matters that affect their particular religion, to advise the commission on members of their specific religion and who should be removed from the register after consultation with the relevant umbrella organization. We are saying this structure, legally speaking, they will not be legal entities. An umbrella organization, for instance, would be taking a risk if they themselves, all by themselves, tried to remove a religious practitioner from the list. Hence, you need the CRL Commission to protect and promote the rights of those religious practitioners as well by making sure that all procedures are followed in a fair and just manner. This peer review committee will serve as an appeal structure in a case where one feels not very well treated by a particular umbrella organization. If, for instance, your umbrella organization feel as mistreated you for one reason or another, this is the first port of appeal. You then go there and appeal the peer review committee. But the peer review committee will also deal with complaints from members of their particular religion. If, for instance, I go to a church of Reverend so-and-so, Mlazi, and I've complained about the reverend that is doing strange things to me, and I see nothing is happening to this reverend, I've gone to the umbrella organization, I've gone to the church, I've gone to the umbrella, and nothing is happening. I should be free to take my case as an individual to the peer review committee. But as it works now also, that you can take your case still to the Civil Rights Commission. Because that's what the law says right now. So you'll have many doors to knock on as an individual if you feel your rights are being violated. Refer cases to the Commission on Matters and Resolutions. They have taken about the religion. They'll take resolutions about their religion and then they'll refer those to the Civil Rights Commission. The Civil Rights Commission will further protect and promote the rights by making sure that procedures are followed, everything is up to scratch legally, and that no one is being ill-treated and marginalized unnecessarily. And then the peer review council, I think we had a lot of complaints from people about the council due to a misunderstanding. I think originally people thought we were saying this council will preside over religion in the country. That is definitely not what we're saying. This is a standalone structure, not above any other structure. But it is still under the Civil Rights Commission. We see why we say that. It consists of proportionally elected members of each religion and experts in all religions. Here you're looking at a mixed group. Mixed in the sense that it consists of all recognized religions in the country. What is this council supposed to do? Its main function will be to recognize new religions that are applying for recognition in the country. Part of what you saw in the clip we showed you was King Nala, for instance. He says he's not a Christian. He's a plaintiff. And we spent some time with him because he says he practices plaintiology, not Christianity. It's because Nala in Isizulu, in English, is plenty. So he has created his own religion called plentyology. His followers are called Amanala. And he has his own doctrine booklet where he writes up, you know, this is how my religion works in terms of plentyology. Yes, it's prosperity religion of a higher level because it's all about plenty. Everything must be plenty. You know, so when we met with him, we realized that this could grow into a new religion. When a person you thought was a Christian says to you, no, I'm not a Christian. I don't follow Christ because people follow me. Then you know you are on the verge of a new religion. And those religions we feel should be allowed. How much of plentyology is taken from Christianity is another story. So what we're saying is that you need a multi-religious grouping of religious experts who understand doctrines of other people from all religions who can sit down around the table, for instance, and say, King Nala, let's see your doctrine book and let's see if it's a new religion. We are saying they will also help in resolving problems and disputes between religions. As a nation, we've been very lucky. We haven't had any disputes that went across religions. But what we are saying is that you never know what the future holds. One of the things we have realized is that intolerance is growing, especially in the new churches where they say people who believe something else are non-believers, etc., and that they'll roast in hell, etc., etc. So you see more of that. And we're saying this council might meet only once in a year, but you need to establish it just in case. But it's mainly to recognize new religions, because our constitution says you've got freedom of religion. And in order to protect that freedom of religion, you need to have King Nala say, this is my new religion, and it should be acceptable. If you want to worship this bottle of water constitutionally, you are allowed to do that. And if you can come up with a doctrine about this bottle of water, for instance, then it should be allowed. Because the constitution says there's freedom of religion, you can believe whatever you want to believe, etc., etc. And what will be the role of the SARL Commission in what you are proposing? The SARL Commission will give the necessary support, legal, admin, logistics to the peer review committee and the peer review council. This is another sticky point where people say, when we say the SARL Rights Commission will take the final decision on all matters and write to the relevant people to indicate the decisions taken. We are saying, as the people who will be taken on review, we need to be convinced that the decisions taken are within the framework of the law. And not to say, because you say you did something wrong, it's fine, you did something wrong, so let him go. But there needs to be checks and balances in the system to make sure that we protect and promote the rights of those religious practitioners or churches, etc. And we've looked at the constitutionality of this and we're convinced that we are within the constitution, because it is, whatever decisions we take are fully reviewable, like all decisions of all Chapter 9 constitutions. The SARL Commission will be the legal entity to be taken to the High Court on recommendations made, should anyone wish to appeal. If anyone wishes to appeal and they want to go to court, it's the SARL Commission that they have to take on review based on the recommendations that have come from the bottom up. We then looked at what this will mean for certain departments. The problem of this application system by some foreign religious leaders, one of the things we discovered as we were doing our rounds in terms of interacting with the sector was that there are very strong feelings that people have about pastors, especially religious leaders who are from South Africa, feel that the other, excuse me, religious leaders from other countries are taking over their space, and that we need to find a solution for that. We have had discussions around how do we do that. And we then spoke to Home Affairs to say, when someone applies to come here, and I'm in another country, and I say I'm coming in here to preach, I'm a pastor, what mechanisms are in place? They say, when you apply, their systems don't apply, because you know, they work on rare skills and they normally go to the professional body and say, if you are a scientist or an engineer from another country and you're an expert, they go to the engineering council and say, what are your recommendations here? Or if you're a health professional, they go to the Health Professional Council of South Africa. But if you are a religious leader, you don't fit any box. So they do what they call a waiver. They waive all requirements and let you in because you don't fit any box. And we feel that might be the problem why the people inside the country feel, especially religious leaders, there are too many in the country. And also, part of what we said to them is that we hope it's not a professional competition. It's not Checkers saying, Woolworths is taking my customers. Because part of it bordered on that. That I had a church and it was running well until it opened his down the road. And all my congregants joined him and left my church. I used to have thousands, now I have 50. And those are, you know, there are financial implications behind that, etc., etc. So we said we need to look at how Home Affairs does this. Whether there's a quota system, whether there's whatever. And we discovered that because it's a waiver, they are waiving. It's more like a green flag, you know, come in, come in, come in. It creates a problem. And then we said the Department of Home Affairs should ensure that the foreign religious leaders applying for a work permit should be based on a quota work permit system, like they have a quota for other professions. And that they must have a letter of recommendation from the Sarah Rights Commission. And of course, the Sarah Rights Commission will say, while you are still in your country, find an umbrella organization here. That will start telling you what the laws of this country are. So that you can then determine while you are at home whether you want to work under this circumstance. That these are the laws, and this is what you must do, this you can't do, this you can do, and they capacitate you, and then they work with you to say you are now going to be registered with us as an umbrella organization. And then the SARL will only write that letter once we've convinced ourselves that the quota of the work permit that we will discuss with the sector through the peer review committee still has spaces for people to come in. And then we release the letter to Home Affairs to allow Home Affairs to do what Home Affairs does. And then the Department of Home Affairs should ensure that religious leaders who apply to become marriage officers also have a letter of recommendation from the Sarah Rights Commission. This letter will help in the sense that it proves that this one is in line. They already are registered and they are part of an umbrella organization and that they are being monitored, that they do the right thing all the time with the marriage officer's license that they are given by Home Affairs. So Home Affairs will still continue to issue those licenses for marriage officers because they must hold that register, population register. And then we looked at social development. Part of what we looked at was the registration of churches as NPOs. That this has many challenges, you know, for instance, monitoring, etc., etc. When they register them, they're telling us that some of them register and then disappear. They don't come back, excuse me, to report. And we're saying the registration of religious institutions, because we feel it can be a hit and miss since you're working with the souls of people, you're working with people's faith. So we need to make sure that the protection and promotion of religious communities is at the forefront as opposed to running a soup kitchen or an ECD or whatever. That the monitoring is much tighter. The registration of religious institutions, places of worship, should be done by the Civil Rights Commission to ensure that all relevant laws, e.g. the municipal bylaws, are adhered to. If you've noticed, for instance, I think in the media not so long ago, which is something we've been discussing with the religious leaders, is that there is a problem that people would find a building and then put in thousands of people in that building, and there are no exit points, there are no municipal bylaw regulation certificates, and sometimes it's a house they convert it to a church, and the rules of the municipality have not been followed. But when social development, for instance, registers you, they don't look into those things. But it's also the safety of congregants that should be paramount, because if one day there's a fire, then there are no fire emergency exits and people will die. So we're saying that for us it's very important that those municipal bylaws are adhered to, but it's not the process that social development is currently following, because they are not in that business of a religious institutions and places of worship. And then there's the issue of SARS. What we also realized was that there's some tax evasions, and we're not sure of what is actually happening there. We find that when we say to a pastor, for instance, okay, you sell this water at 30 rand, are you selling it as a non-profit organization, or you're selling it as a business? They say no, they never sell anything to anybody. People donate. So the 40 rand they charge for a bottle of water is a donation. And we're not sure how that works. You see, I'm sure you had King Nala say to run this business, he spends a million rand a month. If you can afford a million rand a month to run a church, then there's a story to be told there. We're not sure what that story is. So our recommendation is that SARS should do an in-depth investigation into possible tax evasion, if it's there, by some religious leaders and religious institutions, and they can work in partnership with the Civil Rights Commission in terms of coming up with what is right and what is wrong and who should do what and who shouldn't do what. We feel SARS should do that, you know, themselves. And then there's the issue of the Department of Trade and Industry. There are products, items that are being sold for religious, spiritual and traditional healing in the country. We're saying that the DTI, through their relevant entities and structures, must ensure that severe action is taken against those persons and institutions involved in advertising substances that do not follow the advertising standards. If, for instance, you're saying, like one of the people are saying there in the clip, we met a lot of them as we were going around. If you say, this faith water heals cancer, and you're saying to people, don't worry about all these cancer processes that you must go through, just take the water, it will cure you. And then you have those TV programs where people come forward and say, I had cancer and I took water from this pastor and I was cured. I had HIV, now I'm no longer HIV positive, I'm now negative. That's advertising a particular product, because you're claiming that your product cures cancer, or, you know, blood pressure, etc. And you're saying there are laws governing that, and that those laws need to be enforced, and that those what do they call them when people, you know, testify that this has cured me? The testimonies. And if there's nothing that is very strong in terms of advertising, more than testimony. Because those testimonies, then you see someone and you can tell, hey, this one was cured, look what they look like now. You don't know what they looked like before. But if they say, I took this water and this oil and now I'm cured, it should be treated as an advert. And the rules that apply to advertising should also apply in this business. Trade and industry, the issue of misleading adverts, testimonies and miracles on print, broadcast, social media, online, even on lampposts. You see, if you want to enlarge something, phone this number and it will be enlarged. You know, you go around the inner city. In most cities, you find those adverts of enlargement, etc. And that those should also be treated like adverts. And they should not be treated like something else. And you find a lot of them on print. If you buy certain newspapers and go to the back, in the classified ads, it's amazing what claims are there in the classified ads. And that don't need to be managed by DTI using their normal processes. A registration of religious institutions should be moved from CPRO, which would be your NPC, to the SARA Rights Commission, based on the decisions we've discussed earlier. We came to self-enforcement of the law when complaints are lodged pertaining to religious practitioners. We have found even ourselves that there's serious reluctance to act when there are complaints against religious leaders, because they are religious leaders, because people, you know, are very much aware of dealing with them. Even when we've discovered that people have gone to lay complaints with staff about religious leaders, and they are more likely, you know, in the past we've concentrated on domestic violence, but the issue of religious exploitation and the police needs to be dealt with. Because when you go and tell the police that my pastor has exploited me this way and that way, they don't normally move fast enough. So we need to look at it. We're talking about issues of existing legislation. We've spoken to some other departments to say, there may be a need to tweak here and there in terms of registration so that registration moves. But we feel there's an urgent need to amend the existing pieces of legislation in order to protect the congregants and believers. We feel it is very important before we have a crisis in the country. We need to start moving and moving fast before we lose people. Because when this thing, I'm not saying if, I'm saying when. If we continue like this, we can see that people are at risk. And that risk will become a reality in future, in the near future, if we don't move with speed. Let me conclude by saying that the SARA Rights Commission remains convinced that the proposals on the table will ensure that the doctrine of each religion is defended and protected by itself. If it's Christians, it's Christians who will make sure that their doctrine is protected. These proposals will ensure that those that are abusing their members are removed from the system. What we have currently is that if you look at the Doom pastor experience, he got an interdict not to spray people with Doom. And the interdict, thousands of friends later, was just to say, pastor, don't use Doom to spray people, because Doom is not good for them. He's probably using hairspray now. You can use other things, and then we have to interdict them one by one. So the laws are not effective enough. when the other pastor Mguni was using snakes, it was a matter of there's nothing else. The police said there's nothing else we can do here except for the animal cruelty. SPCA had to lay charges against him on behalf of the snake. So if all we can do is to do those types of things and say the poor snake died in your church, so let's lock you up based on the snake situation, that the poor snake died in your church, then it means the laws we have are not effective enough. This proposal will also ensure that the matters of each religion are dealt with by that religion and not the courts. We feel there will be far less court intervention in terms of cases as opposed to what might be happening now. We feel that the sector itself will be able to solve the problem as opposed to other interventions from outside. It will be the religion itself that will say, we will clean up this mess ourselves, we will move forward with a much more respectable religion, especially around Christianity, that the sector will stand up and protect itself, and that the Sharon Commission will be there to merely ensure that all systems are working as per the laws of the country. These proposals will ensure the right to freedom of religion. We believe these proposals will ensure that people's right to freedom of religion is protected and promoted, and that they will do the right thing for their religion, and that you'll be free to choose how you practice your religion and your belief and your conscience, etc. And that's where I will stop for now myself, as I had asked Honorable Chair to say if maybe before that I'll ask Prof. DC to manage the other process. With your permission.
Sure. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the House at large. My role here, short role, is really to request the religious leaders that are present here to give testament of support for the work of the CRL, especially for the report that has been unraveled before you this morning, and just to indicate that we have had a very extensive and wide engagement and consultation with the religious leaders, and those that are here today represent a quite range of religious leaders, and their presence is indeed an indication of how we have interacted with them, and they are happy about the work we are doing. So I'll start off by calling His Grace Bishop B. Khanyani, or his representative, to give a message of support.
Thank you, Chair. We are here as the CC and as his leader. We duly appreciate and embrace the work that is being done by this institution. At the end of the day, the way that they are doing it, the side that at the end of the day, everybody has to say, thank you, thank you. We remember the very first day when we were invited by this body, giving the whole background of where we come from. We said, this exercise is long overdue. But otherwise, we believe in nothing else, but it's never too late to mend. We are where we are at the moment, looking at this body as nothing else but an eye-opener. That ends up with nothing else but, it is not about a leader in a church, but it's about how he leads, and basically about his congregants. Obviously, he has to know the nature of the congregants and target all the ills that they come across. In other words, if you found them poor, get some one way or another, spiritually, to uplift them. If you find them uneducated, get them one way or another, to can possibly uplift them. So that at the end of the day, you can pride yourself. So as Baptists, we are saying, we are really highly impressed by this body, particularly its own approach and the meticulous type of work that they are doing. So that at the end of the day, we as South Africans have to remain proud to say we were lost. All those previously disadvantaged religiously now can see their way and concentrate on nothing else, not individuals, like the rest of our congregation. Thank you.
Now I call upon the rep from the Methodist Church of Southern Africa, Bishop Gary Rivers. Bishop Gary Rivers. We send his apologies. Thank you so much. I now go to the National Council of Religious Leaders, represented by Mr. Giet Koza.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, and I want to greet all the members, honorable members, and honorable bishops and pastors and reverends that are here. I think it's fair to say that this was a long process that was followed. And as you have seen on the video clips, that when it started, it was heated debate and so on, really because of lack of understanding. But as we went through the process with the commission, we must commend the commission that they've been very accommodating for our views and our concerns. And it was a journey of I don't know how many months. And we really want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the commissioners for really working with us and the concerns that we raised. And we're hoping, obviously, as this is an ongoing process, as we raise the views and concerns, we'll still be accommodated. And from the council and IFCC churches, we say we support the work of the commission. We support what they unraveled. And obviously, needless to say, the embarrassment and all were being tainted with the same brush with what they've experienced and seen. And so I think going forward, we're looking forward to still give some more inputs and make sure that the system itself, clean itself. So one of the things that we have raised from the council and obviously the IFCC was ensure the protection of the doctrine, separation of state and church, and freedom of religion, which the commission ensured that all those would be accommodated. So, yeah, so we really, and so we're grateful that we've been invited to be part of this workshop so that we can see and still contribute further as we try to the system to clean itself. So thank you so much, Chair and Deputy Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Giet. I now go to South African Union Council of Independent Churches, represented by Archbishop D. MP Shole. Bishop MP Shole.
Thank you. Once more, again, I greet you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Brethren, I stand here as the president of South African Union Council of Churches with the followers of 3.6 million in six provinces of South Africa. Some of my constituency, they are next to me here, the chairperson and the secretary of the province of the Western Cape, SOSIC. It including exclusive of church, according to the structure, CRL chairperson, it's including of religious practitioner, it's including of federations of interdominal churches in all provinces, and we have a province that governs all the structures. We have policies in place so far. We are here to support the proposal of CRL. We had a lot of engagement discussion with them. We have brought some other members who were not on the good side with the CRL during the tough time. And some of them, they were there in the screen, you saw them, but everything is in order now. We wanted, South Africa is it's represented by almost 95 Christians in South Africa, but we are not organized. You have seen a lot in the TV, in the newspaper, things that were embarrassing the nation, particularly people from outside the country. We have seen a most respected pastor, bishop of the most high office, recruiting young girls in all churches, sleeping with them. We have seen some people in Gauteng, Shoshangube, giving red, giving petrol. You can name them. But this is must come to a stop. We have supported the CRL saying things have to be self-regulated. Yes, we don't want to be extension desk to government, but we need to be self-regulated. SOSIC have already started. We have started with Episcopal College, where we screen all pastors who join us. We take them through three levels, from first month to 6 months. We screen them, we get request the references from the spiritual mother and the spiritual father. We visit their churches, and then from there, we concentrate them. Whether they've been concentrated or ordained for 10 years or 20 years, we start them afresh. We want them to understand the statement of faith. We want them to to be in the same power with the same understanding of the doctrines. Then, the requirement for SOSIC, for any pastor, they need to have a minimum qualification to be able to understand the doctrines. Whether it's been called or not, they need to have a minimum of qualifications. They need to be ordained pastor, or reverend, or bishop, or archbishop. They need to be ordained. Further than that, they need to have a constitution of their church. According to the worship center, they need to have a constitution of the church. We assist them free of charge. We assist to write a constitution and register them with the social development. Further than that, we also put them into the database. It's our database. We're busy negotiating with SALCA, the municipality organization, so that they must put, designate all our members according to their province, according to their municipality, so that they must be in their database. So that when they need land, when they have a restructuring the area, they should be able to know we have so many churches in this area, can't we accommodate a church in this particular area? That's what we are busy with on. We already partnership with government home affairs to train pastors for marriage officer and issue a license, which it will be a partnership with home affairs and SOSI. If they mischief on anything outside the statement of faith, we withdraw the license. Therefore, they cannot practice, they cannot conduct marriages anywhere in South Africa because we check. We submit application to Home Affairs. They verify the criminal activities. They verify their population registration so that whenever when they give a designated number, the member, they are clean. We are proud that we, when we send him out to go and conduct marriage, we are satisfied that this is the right, a clear man of God. I wanted to put this, I don't want to repeat what the chairperson already said because I'm here staying on her right side. I would say further than that, honorable chairperson and member of parliament and Grace, man of the cloth, I am in support of the proposal. But there is another edition I wanted you to look at it. I haven't submitted to CRL. We wanted all foreigners who are practicing, who have churches in South Africa, should be integrated into the designated churches in their particular district because they came in South Africa with a visa, with a visiting permit, not work permit. Now, when they get in South Africa, they found their way under the table, under the carpet, to get an extension of sitting in South Africa. So, their churches should be closed. And then, only those who already have a citizenship, then they can be able to allow to have church. But those who don't have a citizenship of South Africa, the churches should be closed, become part of South African churches, and then we associate, we are going to investigate once the legislation has been done. We are going to investigate together with the law enforcement agency that how did they get their permit into South Africa and how did they get married in South Africa. And then once more, if it goes in our favor, don't be sent home in their countries. We wanted to bring order, Honorable Chairperson. I'm happy that you allow the CRL together with the churches that are here to come and open up their chests. We've been thinking, we've been praying about this so many years that we wanted to bring order. Things that are happening in the country, not even outside the country, even in parliament, that shows I don't know, it's ignorant of going to church or allowing God to control. So we are saying we are going to regulate this policy that will be able to bring order in all churches, and even those who are not part of peer council, peer review, they will be forced to join peer review committee because there will be order. There is law in each and every country. Whether you are not happy with the process, you are not happy with the CRL, but there is order. It's like in my home. In my home, there is order. When my child is 27 years, I always tell him, you'll have your own when you are outside my house. But while you are still in the home, there is order. So I'll just come to a conclusion and say, Chairperson, CRL Chairperson, with the commissioner, and we thank you so much with all effort that you have put in place. I'm sorry we have been hushing, punching you. You had a sleepless night, whereby some other time you had to organize a bodyguard. People were threatening you with the bodyguards, with the firearms. But this time, they've come to an end. There will be no pastor who will be threatening anybody. There will be no pastor raping any children. There will be no pastor coming from any other country and detect to our own country. I then thank you so much, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson. May the God bless you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bishop Chamin. I now call the rep of Church Leader Empowerment Foundation Africa.
Thank you, Deputy Chair of the CRL. You forgot my name. It's Pastor Tiva Lijade. You are forgiven, Honorable Member. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members of Parliament from different political parties, Honorable Chairperson of the CRL, Ms. Toko Nonhle Kwanazi Kaluva, Deputy Chairperson Prof. Luka David Msona, and the CEO of the CRL, Mr. Edward Mafaza, and all the commissioners of the CRL, leaders of different religious organization that are represented here. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me through my right to greet you in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Church Leaders Empowerment Foundation Africa, abbreviated CLEFA, which I represent here today, is an umbrella body of Christian organization, charismatic movement churches in all over South Africa. Christianity, as you would know, represents about 80% of our population, which is way above the two-thirds majority that political parties need to change the constitution. I wish you had our numbers. Yes, we are. We are. Can you imagine if we just say we are boycotting the election? You will have the lowest turnaround, so you need to take us very serious. It is for that reason that as CLEFA we believe that this house cannot operate and fulfill its constitutional mandate truly if it ignores the majority of the constituencies it seeks to represent. CLEFA has been in consultation with the CRL. We've been to their meetings. They didn't call us. We went to them and because we saw they are doing a great job and say, how can we help? We went to them because we had nothing to hide. We are, of course, not proud of some crazy individuals. You saw some of their videos who are feeding their congregants with snakes, petrol, and other strange things. This is a fulfillment of the scripture in Matthew 25, verse 4, where Jesus, our Lord and Savior, said, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and they will deceive many. And I believe many of us are already deceived, thinking those are the real people. Truth be told, these are a small fraction of our Christian population, but because bad news sells, we are all interested in them, and they are promoted more than us who are doing the right thing. There are decent pastors, there are decent church ministers out there. It would be a great mistake for this house and for everybody who is in this country to put all of us in one basket and judge us like the few rotten ones that we have seen. We also have bogus doctors, fake lawyers, and corrupt politicians. But we still use the services of lawyers, doctors, and of course, our honorable politicians. It must be noted that there are also strange practices in other religions. It's not only in Christianity, because it is very dangerous to blame everything on Christianity. Maybe because we are the majority, like the ANC in government, all the focus will be on us. But there are strange things that are happening in other religions. You have heard of the enlarged, the male organ abortion. You've heard of one tablet that cures everything, headache, you get favor at work, you have many lovers. It's one tablet, and those things have not been tested in the laboratory, but they are allowed to operate in our communities. So we welcome the idea or the proposal of regulating faith-based organization, but we stress that this should be done by the organization, as the chairperson of the CRL has already stated, and it should not involve doctrine. Three few things that we think are important in this regulation is that all religious institutions and the religious practitioners should be registered properly. I believe at the moment in South Africa, if you want to open a church, you just pitch a tent. Tomorrow you are a bishop, the following day you are an apostle. From there, you are Dr. Prophet Apostle. It is a shame. Number two, that all religious institutions adhere to the basic principles of accounting. In other words, they must be accounting. There mustn't be a situation where all money just go to one man and no accountability of any kind whatsoever. There must be books that are audited by foreign, by outside auditors. This is what CIPRO or the CIPC was supposed to be enforcing, and I don't know why SARS is also not doing their job. Maybe they must be called to the portfolio committee. That foreign ministers who come to our country should not be allowed to operate before their background is checked from their country of origin, and some checklist, they must be checked. And also that if they want to serve, they must be part of the umbrella bodies in the country. And they must work on a probation basis, maybe 3 years, before they are allowed to operate independently. May I conclude by saying that in the good old days, when the missionaries came to our country, they brought three things. They brought the church, they brought the school, and they brought the hospital. You will find where there's a church, there's a school, and there's a hospital. Unfortunately, our democratic government, honorable chair of the portfolio committee, have taken the Bible out of our schools. And what remains is we see guns, we see sex in our schools, we see drugs, because the Bible has been taken from the school. You might say, why not the other religious documents? I'm talking on behalf of the majority, 80%. If you doubt me, we can go to voting. Our proposal as CLIPA is that just in the same way that in the SAPS you've got chaplains, in the SNDF, in the correctional service you've got chaplains who are preaching the Bible, please allow us to go and adopt schools so that there could be pastors who will take care of the various schools. You don't only need a counselor with a social worker, you also need a spiritual counselor, and we are willing to do this. And this in turn will bring the levels of corruption down, because it starts from bottom to top. It will also help us as we do this job, because we have seen our country is ravaged by corruption from the councillor to premier to president, any level of government, there is corruption. Let me end by saying to you honorable members that who are here in parliament that you are here because the most honorable allowed you to be here. please remain honorable and do the honorable work, knowing that one day he will judge you. Thank you very much. If you want, our speech is available on our website, clefa.org.za. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Linda Harding. Lijaden. Yeah, thank you so much. Now I call upon a rep from the Word of Hope Ministries, Bishop M. Kambule.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity and greet all the honorables here. And all the men of God, bishops, pastors, and different titles. We thank God for this opportunity. I am Bishop Kambule from Ambassador's House Ministries. We have churches in Swaziland, and we have churches here. We have churches here in South Africa. I am born in Swaziland. I am a foreigner. I am part of the subject that is being discussed here. So I am here personally. To represent myself and all the foreigners. So not all foreigners are corrupt. Not all foreign pastors, foreign ministers are corrupt. Actually, the snake class is performed by a South African. The king of water is also South African. And a number of other things that are happening are done by your own local people. The only thing that foreigners have done so well is to take people from your churches and make them come to them. And that has been an issue that has angered a lot of you South African people. That is the biggest issue. There are many other issues. Foreigners, some foreigners, foreign preachers are very corrupt. They engage in horrible things. Just recently we have an issue of a man of another man of the cloth from one of the African countries who has done a lot of nasty things with children. Actually, there has not been a sentence on that. But it is alleged, let me correct myself, it is alleged that he has done certain things with a foreigner. There are foreigners who have done horrible things, foreign pastors, horrible things to people, but they are also South Africans. People are all the same. People, they differ in height and width. Some are bigger, some are taller, and some are light, some are dark. That's the only difference with people. From any culture and any country, that is the only difference with people. Now we need to say, I want to say this. The thing that has brought us here, this meeting, should not have been here. Had we done what we should have done as ministers of the gospel, this meeting is a crisis point for the church. And when I first heard about this commission, I was very upset with a group of charismatic Pentecostal preachers. We were very upset. I had known her before. But when now she was doing this, I didn't recognize the same one I know. And eventually I said, oh, I know her. Now we were very upset because we refused to reason logically. We refuse to look at the issues and the crisis. All we're concerned about is to protect our territory. Tinaga makona, we Christians. Whenever something appears, we say, here comes the devil. We start binding. That is how we are brought up. Whatever we see, we don't understand, we say it's the devil. But here, it's not the devil. The challenges are real. If nothing is done, like government has stepped in to intervene, people are going to die. And we are going to be conducting funerals, which we are trained to do, instead of building lives. Now, this is what I want to add here today. This commission has come here at a very critical time. Whether we like it or not, we will fight, we'll fast and pray and bind it. I think that we must embrace the commission. Why do I say we must embrace them? We have to embrace them so that we can work together. To find common ground, to actually then educate them concerning our religious practices and tell them this is what we practice, this is what we don't practice. They need to understand that it is a fact that we hear from God. We know the voice of God. We need to make them understand spiritual issues. We need to make them understand that doctrinal issues cannot be touched. And we need to clarify doctrinal issues and church dogmatics. And other things that are not even religious or church dogmatics, but they are gimmicks. And a lot of things are gimmicks performed by certain so-called religious leaders in the name of doctrine. Can't be doctrine to feed people certain substances. Can't be part of the Christian doctrine. So we need to clarify those things. But we need to make them understand that we are not hostile. We are first hostile because we're a bit shocked that someone now wants to regulate. They want to regulate us. But then soon we understand that no, they are actually saying that they are not regulating the calling. They are putting structure into what we are doing so that it is properly operated, not in a forest, and properly administered, and there are rules, there is order. Now, what I want to say to add on top of that is that we as a religious people, as a church, there's been a lack of issues that pertain to training. And unfortunately, we are now encouraged by the commission to go back to training, because the absence of training is the biggest crisis. And also, if I may add on top of that, the people, there is a movement of people that eat snake. There is a movement of people that drink petrol. There is a movement of people that do all the funny things. They have a leader who is head of the movement. It is a structured thing. You may take it very light. It's a very structured thing. They have a leader. It's a certain teaching now that they subscribe to. Now, so we have the challenge now as leaders of the church to emphasize on issues of training and empowerment so that we correct the wrongs that we should have corrected before the commission came to help us to correct those issues. And I have already said that I believe that here we are not talking of doctrinal issues. I realized when the chair was speaking, it sounds like she's going into doctrinal issues because, of course, she's talking about Christianity. So definitely there will be an overlap on doctrinal issues. But I believe that will be fine-tuned and addressed the right way so that we are comfortable. Because when you touch doctrine, we become uncomfortable. And then very soon we become uncomfortable. And also one last thing that I'm concerned about is the peer review. That is going to be a very sticky one. The peer review, when we review each other, there is a lot of hostility amongst Christians. If Christians generally, they don't like each other. They tolerate each other. There are fraternals here and fraternals there. There are different organizations. There are organizations that I don't subscribe to because of doctrinal issues. There are organizations that some of us believe that this organization actually caters for Anglican, for Methodist, for Catholic. So we don't believe, we don't belong there because we are charismatic Pentecostal. The organization is irrelevant to our needs. But now we are now forming what I actually am adding here. The peer review needs to be taken very seriously and is a delicate issue. Pastors will kill each other with this. When pastors have too much power, that power corrupts them, and absolutely they get corrupted because they use power to destroy each other, and it's a very sad story. All I am saying in conclusion is that I actually now understand the commission. One, two, I support the commission because I believe that it is going to bring order, but we still need more time to actually add more contribution to the commission to say that if we put this in place, let us watch this. That is what is the outcome of my heart, that we need to discuss more. Like I'm mentioning the peer review, that is going to be a very sticky issue. We'll be in court every day. We'll spend money going to court every day instead of preaching and changing lives because of that particular issue. That is my main concern. But on overall, I think that the chair of the commission and the team that they have worked with, they have done a great job. And lastly, remember, not all of us foreigners are crooked pastors. Some of us have not just mushroomed. We have been around after preaching for 25 years. and built with sound doctrine and have come from a sound church. We come from sound churches that emphasize sound doctrine. I come from the Assemblies of God. We are sound in doctrine. We are sound in faith. We must deal with the crazy foreigners and leave the good foreigners and help us to do God's work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Now I call upon the representative of the Great Commission, Bishop A. Makili.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Bishop Aaron Makili from the Great Commission Ministers Network that we're working as a group of pastors and churches around South Africa. But for us, it was not easy to understand the Sarah Rights Commission, because of we are not just one church or denomination, but we are bringing different churches together. We was not commissioned by anybody to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, as we are the Great Commission. We believe that we command by God. Nobody can tell us who's supposed to preach when we're preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. But it is to solve the problem that was showing us from the CRL. We really appreciate that. We say thank you very much. Thanks, God. Because we've been trying to solve the problems that are around in our churches. But because of, I am not leading only on my church. When I try to solve problems to other pastors, telling me that I must stay away because if I'm doing the right thing on my corner, I must go to, not telling me what to do. But now, some of other issues that are happening in their churches, they need the government, not us. I just want to say thank you very much, RL, to come up and then do the partnership with us. I've been preaching this verse, but nobody understood me. Romans 13, verse 1. That verse says straight that we and the government, we are the partners. Government not supposed to telling us what to do. Government also must understand that why he is in that position. It's coming from God. Why I'm preaching the gospel is because God gave me mandate to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, CRL, open that gate. That is why we are here today. I hear many people that are saying it is a very big history to us as a Christian, sitting in parliament with the members of parliament. That means we are going very far. Thank you, CRL, to open this door. It is not a last day. We are going to say now, because it is not only the church that we see as a problem, as a minister we need to solve. Even in parliament, there's a lot of things. We see on TV every day. We say, how can we go there? Because God not sending us in the Kailisha and Manantia. He also sending around. That is why we had the Great Commission, because he said to us, go ye therefore, make disciples all nations. We're supposed to go to minister in parliament, because there's a lot of things that are happening there. I think, CRL, you are a vehicle that can go there. Thank you very much, Mama. Thank you so much. Because you are...
Thank you so much, Bishop Makali. South African Council of Churches?
On behalf of the SACC, they sent their message of support to us. We've been working with them and talking to them. They are comfortable with what we are proposing. And as all the pastors have said, the conversation will continue. And as we shape and tighten the issues, but the principles will be there and we'll continue talking. They are saying the same thing, that let's continue talking. But as the South African Council of Churches, unfortunately today they're having their hearings, so they couldn't be here. So I'm passing on the message on their behalf.
Before we conclude, we have two items remaining. One, we now call upon the musician in our midst.
May Deborah Fraser please take your position. It's part of the contribution that we are making. Not only the religious people, but there's also the spiritual singing and music which accompanies our efforts in what we do. So, over to you, Mae.
Sanbonani. Honorable Speaker, Chairperson, Honorable Cluster, members, Honorable Members of the National Council of Provinces, oh my God, I don't know whether I have to sing or what. I think it's better if I sing. Please bear with me. I wrote my speech down. So now it's disappearing. Okay, I stand before this important gathering as a legend, spiritual singer, and spiritual mentor in society. It is both an honor and humbling feeling to be afforded the opportunity to speak on this very important matter that is cheering and bringing relief to our community. To say a word of support in addressing this commercialization of religion and the abuse of people's beliefs. Honorable congregants, our people find themselves in this man-made unfortunate situation where we see religious leaders and spiritual leaders taking advantage of innocent people. I, as an artist, as a singer, I feel and I pray that it has to come to an end. Because sometimes we don't know how to defend these things and they keep on going and going and going, which is very, very unfair to our people, more especially the poor people. What I'd like to say today is, that is why when I started looking at what was happening, I had to record a song, Eyayithi Asifuni Abefundisi Abarongo. And at the end of the day, I had a problem because a lot of pastors, bishops, it was like, what is this woman singing about? I have an experience of the things that I've seen happening. That is why at the end of the day, I had to sing that song. I had to compose that song, thinking that maybe if there is a song like that, people will stop doing what they're doing to us. We have a lot of experiences. Mama, I so wish that one day you will call us and then we will really tell you what is going on. Because some of the things maybe you don't know about them. But you need to hear from the people who have an experience of those things. But again, we have to pray as a society. We have to pray as pastors. We have to pray as churches so that all this will come to an end. That is why I said, Asifuna befundisi abarongo, Asifuna befundisi abarongo, Asifuna befundisi abarongo. away from churches because of the things that are happening in the churches. We have to speak the word of God, preach the word of God. We don't have to do material things. Because those things were not there before. The word was there and it's still existing even today. Let us concentrate on telling people the word of God. Not other things, not material things. There is a song that I would like us to sing right now. And I know that you all know the song. Can I start it? Are you going to join me? Go, Bobo.
Outside of the state and governance overall. I think it is important as organs of state for the CRL to really always start by trying to define its role in our constitutional democracy, in building it, with a very important section in the Constitution, and that is Section 1. At least, even if you don't read very far, Section 1 will be able to give you guidance, because that is where we have our founding values and where we want to go. And among them is that we want to build a society and a country where the core values in the Constitution, such as trying to build a non-sexist society, a non-racist society, which respects human dignity, human rights, the rule of law, and supremacy of the Constitution. Those become important not only to CRL, but to all the organizations that are religious organizations, faith organizations, and so on, because it binds everyone in the country, not just the CRL. And then, if you have appetite to read further, you can go to the next section, which is Section 2 of the Constitution, which also affirms supremacy of the Constitution. Some of the discussions that one hears about sometimes try to ignore the Constitution, but without constitutionalism and building a strong constitutional democracy, a lot can go very wrong. And I think that, to me, is critical. But in doing its work, the CRL ought also to refer to Section 237 of the Constitution. That section is important because it also has a principle or a value which says any institution or person carrying out a constitutional mandate or function must do it diligently and without delay. And therefore, this delaying process is actually undermining the imperatives within the Constitution. And we have a lot of those performing constitutional functions and are obligated to do so that are not doing their work with diligence. And I think it is terrible. And that, humbly I would say, applies not only to those Chapter 9 institutions, but also sometimes to Parliament. And I think that it's important, but occasionally, I'm not saying that Parliament doesn't do its work with diligence, but there are so many areas where one would have expected Parliament to prioritize, and those may not just be dealing with religion, but with other factors affecting millions and millions of South Africans. And one of them is communities that were denied the right of title to land in this country during the apartheid era. The law that was being passed and which went through Parliament, they call it CLARA. Communal Land Rights Act. It was taken on challenge to the courts the High Court in Pretoria used it to rubbish African traditions and African values and distorted it. So the judgment, when you read it, sometimes you wonder whether some of the judges really know what they are talking about. But the majority of the judiciary is doing a good work and doing it well. But when the matter went to the Constitutional Court decided we don't want to go into details about culture, suspicions that people have of traditional leaders and distorting even African core values. And so on, the Constitutional Court just said, well, the problem of that piece of legislation was that it was considered by Parliament under Section 70, 75. It is called tagging in Parliament, and not 76, that requires extensive consultation because it affects people in the provinces, on the local government level, and so on. So sometimes it is important, but since the Constitutional Court made that decision, either the executive or Parliament have not acted on it. So since the Constitution was passed and entered into force on February the 4th, 1997, the vast majority of people in our country who live in the former so-called Bantustan do not have any title to land. Why is that the case? Who is not doing their work? And then we talk of poverty, we talk of lack of entrepreneurship, we talk about lack of development. Now we have started a new language. It is called rapid economic transformation. How can you transform when you don't even have proper title to the land? So we need to be serious as a country wanting to build a constitutional democracy. Second, on the question of what we are discussing today, there seems to be a confusion between Section 31 of the Constitution, which gives people the right to religion and to be able to deal with their religion. The commission, that is the CRL, is not dealing with that. It is not trying to go inside the religious institute to tell them how to do their work, how to believe, how to preach, and so on. It is dealing more with organizing proper structures under which fall in a different part of the Constitution. And I think that becomes important. So just to correct, it is not dealing with Section 31 Section 15 of the Constitution, rather than 31. I mix those two. Section 15 is the core of religious belief and what the people in religion need to deal with. 31 is the one which deals with questions of even forming associations, structures, and so on. And the Constitution says that communities that are religious and so on can form associations. It is written into the Constitution. That is Section 31. So I think that the confusion which is there is between Section 15 and Section 31, and I don't think that CRL is trying to interfere with Section 15 of the Constitution, but rather to set a system of regulation under Section 31, and the Constitution does provide room for doing that. I think that becomes very important to clarify. As it moves forward with the recommendations that it has made and is presenting to the Portfolio Committee in Parliament, it is also important to know that CRL is not above the Constitution. And if there are challenges which are going to be made by sections of the religious bodies who say they fear state control, and that's why they are saying this should not go forward, I think the Constitution gives them ways of challenging that from a constitutional and legal point of view. And to do so, they will be entitled to just administration action. In other words, they can, the process of doing all this work, CRL has to ensure that it just doesn't just strike various religious bodies out or threaten them. The religious bodies and individuals can challenge that in course of law under the just administrative action under Section 33 of the Constitution. But also they have a right to go to court under Section 34 of the Constitution. And they can go to court or any tribunal which is independent. It doesn't just talk about the courts as the only alternative. So I think there are protections which are built into that. And I think Parliament also has opportunities. Parliament has been taken to court on a number of issues that deal with the law. And I would like to very quickly just point out that in the enforcement provision in the Constitution, Section 38, that offers a lot of rights of religious organizations really to be able to challenge whatever they may think is unconstitutional in a court of law, and not just to be able to dismiss the work which is being done to protect the, if you like, the congregants or followers and so on. I don't think that that is what the CLR is trying to do. But be that as it may, there are also other provisions in the Constitution. There is no right in our Constitution without limitations. And I think that the Chair did mention that Section 36 becomes very, very important. But it has to be done within a parameter that is within a constitutional democracy and so on. So there are protections within the Constitution and the laws of the country. And this fear sometimes is over-exaggerated. I think it is one which we need to really bring to the debate and be able to deal with it. Parliament also, if it passes the bill as it is or with changes here and there, can also refer whatever bill is passed in Parliament to the Constitutional Court, just to satisfy that this is proper and so on. And those who are not happy can go and put their case so that it is clarified once and for all. I think that becomes very, very important, that we can see that sometimes you don't have to pass the law and say we are now just implementing it. If you are not sure of Parliament, you can take it for a review by the Constitutional Court to avoid so many litigations that are going on in the country. Some of them are not very helpful indeed. And I think that needs to be pointed out. Lastly, because of time factor, I can see some of you look hungry, maybe it is lunch time coming, is to be able to really indicate that regulation is very important. The society we are in now, corruption is rampant. Money laundering is rampant. Questions of so many other areas. And religious institutions cannot be left without proper regulation. The question is how rather than why. Because when you say you can't set a system of registration of and so on, all you are saying is leave us alone. It is only God that can regulate us. But we can't ask God whether there's good regulation, because religious leaders are human beings. All human beings, we make mistakes. Sometimes we make bad judgments and so on. So I think that it is very, very important that whatever is set up, which was shown in the graph that was put up there, we just need to look at it and tweak it a little if need be. But to say that that cannot be done, I don't think is true from a constitutional point of view. To say that peer review, you know, committees, as my brother from across the border was saying, who is sitting next to me, that it will bring war within religious leaders. Where is their tolerance? The values that people associate with religion and ethical behaviors and so on. We can't say don't touch us, just leave us alone, because I think that would be a way in which there are other structures in society that will say leave us alone, and that will not really help us in building a strong constitutional democracy. There is more that one could say, but I think I want to be brief just to be able to say religious bodies should also read Chapter 2 of the Constitution very well, because their followers, worshippers who follow them, are entitled to various rights, some of it which we saw being damaged in the clip that was shown, that documentary. The right to dignity, human dignity, were being violated, and we were saying, and then we say, what can we do? And so on. And I think that the decision that was made to say people can eat anything they like snakes and so on. I'm not saying in the world there are people who eat snakes, and they regard them as delicious. So I'm not saying they shouldn't be eaten, but was it within a community where snake eating is part of the culture? I don't think so, not in South Africa. People have the right to security of the person against any form of violence. religious bodies ought to say, are there religious practices that damage people's right to security? Not just dignity is one of them, security is one of them, protection of children, as provided in the Children Act, and so that religious bodies are not seen to be violating provisions in the Constitution and the laws of the country left right. I've been informed that time is up, so I will stop here, but I think as we continue with the conversation, we shall be able to elaborate on some of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Professor. It was part of the overall input from the Sierra Commission, responses from the religious leaders, accompanied by the spiritual nurturing through the song, and also addition from the constitutional aspect, to allow us to enter into much more informed discourse about these issues which are dogging our country. And now I'll give it to you. Chair, over to you, the chair of the Portfolio Committee, and for the opportunity that you have given us to share with everybody here.
Thank you very much, Professor. And I think we are hungry now. Otherwise, we may end up eating snake. We are very hungry. I think we should break at least at 1:30 until 2:30. There is 10 minutes of time that we agree that members of the communities that are here, they can also make their comments. There will be a lot of other people who have done research here who may want also to bring something to our attention. If they are around, they want to do so, please take time to it. That is the start of a long process. But you want to hear the views, the workshop. There's no line. That is a workshop. Anyone can express a view. Of course, line already has been given by bishops. But for other members of the society, if there are issues that they want to raise, surely will allow them platform to do so. Anyone want to make a comment? No, not members. I'm asking. Hold on. No, hold on. Hold on a bit. It's 10 minutes that we are giving members to the community. Yes, sir. We will allow you platform. Freedom of religion of South Africa. Allow you space also to do so. Madam, we'll break it 1:30. You make proposal when you're there. No, you have to know how many people want to make a comment. We don't want to be here until 7 p.m. If we'll note the freedom. Reaching, not you, and you come back. We take you also, and you come back. At least three members of community want to make a comment. There's no other person. Okay. What we should do then is to allow our bishops. You'll be the first one, honorable members today. Honorable members at home. We should allow the bishops to lead us to the table. If they wish to pray, they can pray. I'm a congregant myself, and therefore bishop will lead us, and then all of us then will follow. have something to eat until 2:30, and then we are back at 2:30. Thank you very much. No, 2:30. What is the time now? 3 minutes.